support the settlement. That's not to say that there isn't tremendous fear here. How would you ever know whether this is a good settlement if you were a consumer or a family member? It would be impossible, especially, and that's also true when you have some of the attorneys sending out pre-filled out forms in which a number of our members were sent pre-filled out forms with all the answers checked, opposing the settlement. It's almost impossible that there isn't great fear among the consumers and family members, and there's an overriding distrust of the legislature. But I think that if everyone moves ahead in good faith with an honest intention to make this work, then it will work. And this is our last opportunity to make that happen. Otherwise, I think the settlement is a good settlement. We looked at it in detail. Experienced people that have been involved in these issues for 8, 10, and 12 years, and we're supportive of the settlement, and we would ask you to approve it. We also would like to have those other things like that Mr. Godstein and Walker want, but I guess we also believe a deal's a deal, and that we're not going to probably get those because there isn't the time. And there isn't the time for the renegotiations and that. So we would ask you to correct the things that Judge Green has noted, and then we will do our part to support that settlement. And just one last comment. There's the threat of the legislature has put in the December 15th deadline, which we call the cram down provisions. I guess I think that that the only one likely to utilize those are the people opposing the settlement. So I think that, again, on this, if you act here, we'll take it to Judge Green. I think she will approve it. And then I also agree that the appeal will fail, and we'll have a settlement which will end this litigation. So I would urge you to support and pass the legislation that's put before you, and then we'll do our part to make this settlement work.
Mr. Murphy, for the record, you're with the Alaska Alliance, is that correct?
Yes, I've served on its board. And yes.
Are there questions? Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We will go back to Fairbanks, and we have Sue Sheriff.
I've got that in civil and license. Was there all of the time?
Yes, it is.
Okay. My name is Sue Sheriff, and I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm not a lawyer or an officer of the Alliance for the Mentally Ill. My late father would have been a beneficiary of the case. The dissolution of the Mental Health Trust was a serious breach by the legislature of a public trust, and the current legislature has an opportunity to take some significant action to undo the damage that was done in 1978, damage which has led to all the protracted legal actions and negotiations of this case. The legislature should restore the trust and its obligations to its mentally ill constituents by amending the settlement legislation to protect against future breaches of the trust and to include clearly identified, meaningful, income-producing lands like the coal lands. This is the time to admit the state's obligation to the mentally ill. The class of beneficiaries may seem small and otherwise preoccupied. However, mental illness is defined by the court in this case has far-reaching effects, and it isn't exclusive to one area of the state or one sort of family or one particular economic group. It's in all of our best interests, including the legislature, to put teeth in the settlement by amending it strongly to reflect the changes offered by the original plaintiff's legal representatives. Please remember, as someone else mentioned before, as you deliberate, that the suit was not brought to damage moms and pops or to stifle development, but simply to hold the legislature accountable for what the court deems improper act. Thank you for listening to us tonight.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? And next, we'll go to Mr. Al Aaron, also in Fairbanks.
You've decided not to testify. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there others in Fairbanks to testify?
No, there's nobody else. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you again for your patience. Are there others in Anchorage to testify? Okay. What about here in Juneau? Are there anyone else wish to testify? I would remind the committees that Mr. Tom Waldo is available to answer questions if any of you care to have him to come forward. He represents the public interest interveners. Okay. Representative Brown, do you want to have the Attorney General come back to address those questions you had had earlier? Okay.
They'll kill him.
So, Mr. Attorney General and Commissioner Noah, we lost Shelby. Money stuff. Representative Brown, would you like to rephrase or restate your question?
Thank you. We heard suggestions from the attorneys for two of the plaintiffs or two of the plaintiffs' attorneys.
This is my final
specific
tip.
Suggestions of things they say, if you did this, we would be on board, and that would be the end of the appeals they might raise. What is your view of these items they put forward? And I'd like to know specifically, would it be a good idea if we were able to reach some true settlement that included everyone, would we not be better off and have a more secure arrangement than the situation that we're now facing? Or what do you view?
Madam Chairman, first, I think we need to come back to sort of the purpose of why we're here, and it's to deal with Judge Green's concerns. The judge in past decisions has stated that she can dismiss this case without all the parties agreeing to the settlement, and that is the situation we're in right now. And the legislation you have in front of you basically deals with her concerns. Now, the proposal, or the so-called proposal that Mr. Walker has put in front of us, is really not what we call, would consider a settlement proposal. It's simply not specific enough. And it's much like Chapter 66, where Chapter 66 was a process to settle versus a true settlement. This list that has been laid out, I'll give you an example, the value list that you've been hearing. When we went in front of Judge Green, the value of that list was $175 million. And then if you look at a letter that went to the Senate President and the Speaker, it was $75 million. So the number tends to be going all over the place relative to these specific values. We have sat down and tried to address each of Mr. Gostine's concerns on the land list, and we're happy to sit down with him now or any time and go through those once again to try to explain those to him. There's a difference in the way we're counting things. There's a difference in the way we're adding things up. And that partly has to do with what's going on with the land list. In terms of the coal lands, you've paid for that. That's part of the $200 million that you, in cash, that you put forward. And in terms of the value of this deal, you can add to it the royalties off of the East Belly coal lands right now are, say, $1 million a year. But you're simply adding value to this trust when the judge has not come to us and asked for additional value. I mean, that is not really an issue that's in front of us right now, because what she has said is this is within the realm of fairness in terms of allowing her approval. So from the standpoint of the coal lands, it can be added, but we're not clear what is being gained out of adding it to this list right now. In terms of the proposed amendments, things like survey and that type of thing, we don't disagree that surveys need to be done. But 75% of those lands have already been surveyed, and the remaining lands would be very expensive to survey. The estimate of about $15 million is an accurate one, to the best of our knowledge. If you all would like to put $15 million into it, I guess we'd be more than happy to accept it. But I'm not sure that that's going to improve the chances of the judge dismissing the case at this point in time. I'm not sure what your money would be buying you. The flip side of that is that as these properties become available to be disposed of or a deal made on them, then they will have to be surveyed. But that will be part of the interaction between DNR and the trust manager, either through the client coming and proposing to lease that land or however that might occur, but that will be done on a parcel-by-parcel basis. Those lands could be surveyed now and never touched for 30 years, and the time value of your money is in question there. So from that standpoint, we're not clear that the proposals that Mr. Gostine has put in front of us are going to essentially improve the deal as outlined by the judge. Bruce, do you have anything to add at all?
Let me take a little bit different tack, though I think it gets to exactly the same result. Obviously, there was a trust that provided the monies would be first applied to the mental health programs, though not exclusively. There was a breach of the trust. The Supreme Court ultimately determined that the trust was to be reconstituted insofar as possible. Made no specific commitment that or directive that any specific parcel of land had to go back to the trust. To the extent it could be restored, it should be. To the extent that there was a shortfall, there had to be a substitute fair market value, and the state was entitled to a set-off. And that directive was to the Superior Court to supervise the reconstitution of the trust. And that's basically been the function that Judge Green has served since that period of time. And she has, on several occasions, been presented with issues to decide, and she has issued decisions. One that I think is important that Commissioner Noe already pointed out is the fact that not all parties have to agree, not even a majority, in order for her to grant either preliminary or final approval. And it's actually ironic, perhaps in some respects, that when she rendered that decision, it was a decision which was under the context of the state being allied with those who are opposing the present settlement. The legislature, ever since the decision by the Alaska Supreme Court, has virtually every year tried to solve the problem, and we came back to you this year. It's important to point out that this is not simply a negotiation between plaintiffs and the state. It is a multi-party litigation, and it has required trade-offs with all participants in the litigation to try and reach settlement. Virtually every proposal which Mr. Gostine and Mr. Walker have brought forward today to you are issues which they specifically presented to the court as a basis for denying preliminary approval. And she rejected each of those, and with an explanation. We reached agreement. I think the coals, the coal lands are a particularly good example, again, that Commissioner Noe pointed out you've already paid for. We negotiated that. With regard to the survey issue, she's talked about that specifically. The trust principles is discussed at length. The terms in our settlement were not lightly arrived at. Every one of the issues was heavily debated, discussed, disputed, and it was what allowed us to reach the final construction. The settlement was presented to Judge Green, and it was up to her to make the first cut, and she will make the final cut on whether this is a fair settlement for the class of people that are the plaintiffs in the case. And she has made that preliminary determination, and she's told us what it takes to get the rest of the way. And that's really what we're dealing with. For us at this point to accommodate the additional requests, in part it is giving additional consideration. That is less troubling to me than the fact that it fails to take into account that this is a multi-party settlement that's been reached with great care, and that what is happening is an attempt to really add on more to a deal and, in essence, skew the deal with other parties who are not right now testifying in front of you about the deal that they negotiated and what they gave up to get what is in there. And for those reasons, I would not recommend to the legislature that any of these proposals be accepted. And I guess there's one other point that's probably more a lawyer concern than anything else, and that is, these are not settlement proposals that have been made to you. If you've listened very carefully to the comments, they have not told you that there is a settlement and they'll sign the document. They have told you that if you buy off on this, they will recommend a settlement to their clients, which means, again, you cannot walk out of here, even if you accept every one of their recommendations, with a deal. It is one that the only commitment made is to recommend then a settlement with the state.
Additional questions? Representative Brown, do you have a follow-up?
Or is it? Yes, I wanted to follow up on the issue of the missing parcels, which we heard testimony was not part of the consideration. And do you view that as a significant issue, or I'm really not understanding what has become of these parcels that's caused the discrepancy?
Madam Chair, I do not view these as missing parcels like we forgot about them or something. Or they were simply not part of the negotiation. The Healy and Beluga leases were part of the negotiation, and clearly it was thought out by us. I think there's some ag parcels in here. Also, I mean, these are all things that were considered by us, as far as I'm concerned, in the negotiations. And as the judge says, you give a little and you get a little. And everybody gave and everybody got some. We came to a list, a settlement, that Mr. Gottstein and Mr. Walker did not sign on to, but we came to a settlement with a whole group of other people. So when we say these are missing, they're not missing in our mind. The deal is the land list that you approved when you passed the bill, and it would be amended by this land list here. Now, there have been certain parcels that Mr. Gottstein has pointed out to us. I think he was right, there were about 17 that we have included that we simply did overlook. So we have included those in this list here. But when you're talking about these leases and some of the other things, it's not that we just forgot about them. We just didn't agree to put them in. So this is renegotiating the deal.
Representative Brown.
So has it changed since this summer when the judge considered it and gave preliminary approval? Has it changed since that time?
Only in that we're making these corrections here.
Yes, I realize that we're making those corrections, but they've asserted that there's been a significant amount of value removed since the preliminary approval, or at least that's what I understood.
Madam Chair, we can't remove from the list. The list is something that the legislature put in as part of the bill. The reason we had to come to you for the Salsha exchange was to get permission to exchange those lands, so it isn't something we can just take out and push back in, something like that. The modifications we made are here in this list right here as part of the technical corrections to the land list. This is the only change that's been made.
Perhaps the question is, what are these missing parcels missing from?
I don't know. I don't understand that either. Again, to me, what we are doing is trying to renegotiate the deal.
Senator Little, and then Senator Kelly.
Do you agree with the settling plaintiff's attorney that this settlement would, or an appeal of the settlement would be denied by the courts if the legislature passed the bills before us?
Emphatically so, yes.
Senator Kelly.
Well, Madam Chair, I hope the court doesn't think that everybody in the legislature buys off on this settlement either. I've got a lot of problems with this thing. I mean, I'm only voting for it, and I voted for it at the end of session because for this thing for 8 or so years to try and get this settled, I finally saw where there's an opportunity to get it done. Some finality to the process, as the teachers like to say. You know, I've been here 17 sessions. Jalmar's been here 32. How many commissioners of natural resources have I been through? How many attorney generals have I been through? How many governors? Four governors. Probably eight of the rest of them. And it takes a couple of years to get for you guys to get up to speed. We know we've got a new bunch coming in, probably.
Highly likely.
Well, he's filing for more.
Right. I'm managing a host of new legislators. So, I mean, I view this as not a perfect settlement. I don't like the authority's power. I think that there's not enough public accountability in the authority. I frankly have a lot of problems with some of the provisions in the legislation, but I will support it because I know how this system changes. I know that we have an opportunity here, and if Judge Green will say, let's go get it done, I'm hopeful that we can all think about something else next year.
Madam Chairman, just to emphasize and support Senator Kelly's concern about finality, what you have for the first time is a preliminary approval. It's never happened before. You have a schedule which calls for hearings, and you have a deadline which the judge herself has recognized and intends to abide by, which is a final determination by November 15th. So while there in all likelihood will be a different crew at this end of the table in 3 months or less, I think there's a very high degree of probability that you're not going to have them talking about this issue again.
Senator Frank.
The deadline that we had in the legislation, would you review the amendments again with regard to that and why you're proposing those amendments to the deadline?
Well, what we are proposing is that the December 15th date stay in effect. That once Judge Green makes her decision, though, that the deal goes into effect. That it stays in effect until or if, in the highly unlikely case, that the Supreme Court overturns Judge Green's decision. And at that point in time, if the Supreme Court did, the $200 million would go back into the general fund. The trust authority would be dissolved.
How does that differ from the legislation we passed?
The past legislation said that by December 15th or the 45-day extension, as you remember, by that time that the case had to be dismissed with no appeals taken. That was the difference. It is our assumption, our working assumption at this point in time, that those opposed to settlement will appeal the decision.
And you think that this will, well, how does that change the effect of things? I mean, the proposed amendment and what advantage is there in that change?
It simply gives, we've got a Supreme Court where there's only three, it's my understanding, where three justices are available to actually hear this case. One of those justices, unfortunately, is sick, and we have a very short time frame. The way it would work is that when Judge Green makes her decision on November 15th, there's 30 days before an appeal has to be made. Let's assume that the extension was made by the governor for 45 days. Then the court would have to make all their findings within that 45-day period. It is possible, but we are essentially putting ourselves in a position where if something goes wrong, if a judge has to go to the hospital or something happens, sort of by default, the thing falls apart. And the risk is we're so far down the line.
What changed in the rationale for this mechanism or lack of a mechanism? What's changed in your analysis?
I think there's two things. One, we were hopeful that we could get to the point where that everyone would settle. I'm not sure that we can get to that point. Second, I think we know more now than we did before. And we didn't have the judge's schedule at that time. We didn't completely understand how the judge would lay out her schedule. So with her making a decision by November 15th, it really, and we feel that she'll take every day up till November 15th, really has tied our hands more than we thought it might.
I think the third feature is we can free the hostages sooner.
Because?
Because the bill becomes effective, the legislation, the settlement becomes effective upon dismissal.
Whereas before?
It would hang tough until all appeals had been exhausted within that either December 15th or the additional 45 days, that is to the end of January.
And how long do you expect the appeal process to take?
With regard to the Alaska Supreme Court, again, you'll have the 30 days. It's hard to, again, that maximum window is going to rest with any who choose to take the appeal, but they have a maximum of 30 days to take it. My sense is that the Alaska Supreme Court will move expeditiously. I'm sure the parties will all ask for expedited consideration. I see that as a 3 to 6 month process. There is still the opportunity for a party to take or request an appeal or petition the U.S. Supreme Court. And again, that period of time is a several-month process just to have the court decide whether it wants to take the case. My judgment is, and I think all the parties would agree, it's highly unlikely that the U.S. Supreme Court would take this case. Certainly the plaintiffs who oppose the settlement have already gone on record as saying that it's highly unlikely it would be taken.
Thank you.
Senator Rieger and then Representative Martin.
With the amendments that are put forth in these two bills, do you have to reword any part of the settlement agreement that's already better corresponding revisions that have to occur in there?
I can't answer that question, but I will turn to Mr. Custer. And answer is that we do not believe that will be necessary.
In the settlement agreement, I know that we can't amend it, but you know, it's interesting to look at what it says. On one page, there's a clause that basically references the party that would use best efforts to seek and obtain passage of legislation if it's needed. Is that the prevailing standard, or is there anything in here that binds the legislature per se to pass a bill?
There's not. The best efforts are those, Madam Chairman, that are being applied today.
Okay, so for example, on page 6 where it says the intent of the party shall be obtained by legislative amendment, that means you'll use your best efforts.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was wondering, Mr. AG, in your presentation to the court, or at least to Judge Green, do you have the opportunity of telling her that if it is refused, that there may be other provisions that will never be reestablished, like the $200 million? I'm afraid once that goes back into the general fund, the mental health people might as well kiss that goodbye. It was good to get it on the side now, but too many people are hungry next year for education budget, for other budgets, and I'm afraid it's not going to be $200 million. May offer some worthless land, but do you have an opportunity to tell that?
Madam Chairman, I think Judge Green is thoroughly familiar with how House Bill 201 works, and I think she's also very much sensitized to the political environment that we're in. So in that respect, I also suspect that most, if not all, parties share the view that a previous speaker had given Pat Murphy when he commented that there's unlikely to be a fifth settlement. So I think that's a view that's largely shared.
Representative Parnell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Attorney General, you gave a bit abbreviated response to Senator Little's question in terms of what the chances of success were of an appeal. And I wondered if you could just briefly state what the standard of review would be that the Supreme Court would use on Judge Green's decision.
It's basically a clearly erroneous standard. Well, actually, they're going to be there too. The Supreme Court will sit on issues of law. They will independently review any issues of law as to what the Enabling Act means, to the extent that that's directly applied, and as a question of a law. There isn't any particular deference given as to any factual issues, though. The valuation issues, as an example, will be one that great deference in terms of a clearly erroneous standard would be applied.
And secondly, when we get to a point where the appeal is initiated and the settlement process goes on, kicks into gear and the settlement process moves on, is there a chance for the parties who are appealing to move for an injunction to stop the settlement process from going forward? And if so, what standard of review would be used there?
The parties, any person appealing, presumably would first ask the Superior Court for a stay of the dismissal. My sense is, again, if the dismissal is granted, there'll be no stay. The next remedy is to petition the Supreme Court for a stay. Likelihood of a stay being granted, I think, is very low, but the standard itself is much an injunctive standard. Irreparable injury to a party caused by the other, and is there no other adequate remedy at law? And, of course, the remedy at law is for the court to ultimately determine that the trust is invalid, or that is to say the reconstitution is invalid.
Senator Rieger.
Just one last question I forgot to ask. On contracts entered into by the trust authority generally, what is there a remedy if those contracts are pretty clearly a violation of the fiduciary responsibility and they kind of go off on a long-term contract that really just isn't in the course of what would be described as in the best interest?
Presumably, Madam Chairman, any beneficiary who believes that the trust authority has violated its responsibility will have recourse in the courts to challenge the actions of that trust authority.
Including setting aside a contract that's entered into?
Not unlike any other challenge to a government or private contract.
Okay. Representative Terrio.
I do buy into the argument that Judge Green is the impartial attorney amongst all the attorneys here trying to make a decision. But I'm not sure, was she the original judge that the Supreme Court remanded it back to for consideration and reconstitution? How long has she been working?
She was not the original judge on the case. My recollection is, but let me change, my suspicion is that she first became involved in about 1987.
So in your opinion, is there any other person in the state that doesn't have some kind of is taking a particular side that is as well versed as she is in the legal arguments involved in this case?
Who is not otherwise committed to one party or another? The answer is no.
Are there further questions?
My question was on a little different subject, so if it's on. I'll go ahead temporarily to another subject, but on February the 24th, 1994, Mr. Patella, you responded to me in writing and said if you could be of any further assistance to let you know I'm going at this time. And it is in response to an article that was in a paper that basically talked about the cost of the special session. What you told us at that time was the cost of the litigation expenses from the beginning to the present. So maybe if you could update that for us so that the public will know that even though the special session does cost money, that in the long run is probably going to save money that can be used both for mental health purposes and remain in the general fund. So if you could update that for us.
Madam Chairman, if I might be able to furnish the committee that information tomorrow morning, I'd like to do that.
Well, to clarify that, are we asking for the total amount of expenditures since 1982?
Yes.
On all, to all parties that the state has paid?
Yes. What the state has spent and so forth on defending the cases and so on and so forth?
That was over $8
million. Madam Chairman, I may have an answer as of the... Madam Chairman, this is woefully out of date. It's 2 weeks old, and I know that the meter has been ticking in the meantime. But I show, as of September 13th, expenditures in terms of legal costs of $8,581,878.93. And I'm sure the private attorneys here are present would be glad to tell you how much they've charged in the last 2 weeks.
No, Madam Chairman, I just asked that question because, you know, I think the public has the right to know. I think the governor and the legislature has been criticized with the cost of a special session, and I think it's just information that could be brought forward.
Madam Chairman, it might also be helpful just to indicate for this fiscal year itself, monies expended to date. It, I think, gives a little better perspective, and the summary I have shows a total of $3,064,380.63.
Jeff, you can come up with a way to insulate the legislature from criticism, please let me know.
Senator Frank.
I was just reading through the settlement, and those seven deficiencies that the other attorneys have outlined, and then she did go through and address each one. And although I didn't see the issue of values that well discussed in the preliminary settlement, and I guess what I don't want to see is the judge make the determination that there is still some value issue there. And I think you've done a good job of explaining why the coal lands shouldn't be added to the list, i.e. they're kind of negotiated away with the $200 million. But I didn't see that much discussion in here, and perhaps you could direct me specifically to that if there is something I missed.
Madam Chairman, I would begin at approximately page 50. And the discussion goes through, it's still about page 56. Let me just take a quick look. Page 56, and then finally, I think it's also helpful to look at the table 1 or appendix A to the opinion, which shows again her analysis of the various positions.
Okay.
Are there further questions? Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it possible that right now it looks like that went to a situation where all or nothing, at least that the plaintiffs want all or nothing, give us these or you get nothing. I'd rather roll the dice. But doesn't Judge Green have the possibility of giving you 90% of the package or 80% of the package, and at least we'll move someplace to the settlement?
Madam Chairman, the judge makes quite clear that, and I think correctly so, that it is not the role of the court to negotiate or participate in the negotiations of a settlement. What she may do and what she has done with preliminary approval is to make suggestions, and I think it's the term she actually uses in her decision about how concerns could be addressed. But she herself will only take the package that is presented to her and apply appropriate legal standards, the fairness test, to that settlement without urging the parties to make any amendments at the time. It's either up or down. If it's in either case, we would expect a written decision explaining the reasoning for either accepting, approving the settlement, or rejecting it. As you recall, late December of 1993, she provided us with an extensive memorandum explaining why she rejected the Chapter 66 settlement.
So it is all or nothing.
Yes, it is, Madam Chairman.
Further questions? It is our intent, then, to recess to the call of the chairs of the individual bodies. The Senate Finance Committee will come back to order in 5 minutes as soon as the House members leave and decide what our time frame is going to be.
Okay, and before we leave tonight, I want to poll the House members. We can either go down the other end of the hall and say meet in 10 minutes to continue our meeting here and to act on these two pieces of legislation, or else we can come back tomorrow morning at 8:30. What is your choice, Representative Grusendorf?
I'm easy.
Pardon?
I'm easy.
Very easy. Representative Parnell?
Tonight, but I'm easy too.
Tonight, okay. Representative Brown?
I think I'd prefer the morning, but either way.
Okay. Representative Hanley? Kind of easy.
Well, you have budget and audit at 8:30.
Yes, I talked to the chairman of the Budget and Audit Committee, and we know that both the House and the Senate are going in at 11 o'clock tomorrow. We do have the movement from second to third reading in the 24-hour rule, so I imagine there will be plenty of time tomorrow afternoon for Budget and Audit to meet. So if the option is that we meet tomorrow morning, then Budget and Audit would be tomorrow afternoon. If not, Budget and Audit would remain tomorrow morning.
Well, the only other thing is, who's ahead at the football game? That may, if I'm missing a good game, I might be.
Representative Martin?
Up to you.
Representative Navarre?
I'm going to be here in the morning.
You're going to be here in the morning? Okay, I see Representative Parnell. The House Finance Committee meeting will stand in recess then until 8:30 tomorrow morning, and we'll meet the House Finance Committee room at that time.
We're in recess for 5 minutes. We have before us Senate Bill 382 and Senate Bill 383. I will note that in your packets the only new material is the letter from Governor Hickel dated September 26, 1994, asking for prompt action on these two measures, and also a zero FISCO note signed by Nancy Slagle, also dated 9/26/94, for Senate Bill 382. Is there discussion?
Would you like a motion on the bill?
Yes, we should have a motion on each of the bills if there's no discussion.
Chairperson, I would move Senate Bill 382 out with individual recommendation.
Motion to move Senate Bill 382 with individual recommendations. Is anyone opposed to moving that bill? Senator Frank.
No, I'd just like to say that I think we dispense with most of my questions in the process of the joint hearing, and I'm satisfied that after having read the judge's decision that we have addressed the concerns, and I think we're doing the right thing.
I'm glad we took long enough to give you an opportunity to read all the way through it. Are there other comments? Is anyone opposed to moving Senate Bill 382 from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note? Senate Bill 382 has moved from committee. Is there a motion on Senate Bill 383?
Also moved.
Senator Curtula has moved Senate Bill 383.
The individual recommendation.
Individual recommendations. Is anyone opposed to moving Senate Bill 383 with individual recommendations? Senate Bill 383 has moved from the Senate Finance Committee. I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank not only the administration, which I think has done an excellent job of communicating both Judge Green's concerns, their concerns, working to put bills together, answering everyone's questions, and trying to foresee what those questions might be. But I also appreciate the fact that all of the plaintiff's attorneys involved have also been very forthcoming with information, with their points, with answers to any of our questions, and I really appreciate the fact that everyone who has been involved to this point has been working to try to answer questions, not to try to get in the way of the legislature being able to take action very quickly. And unless there's further business to come before the committee, the Senate Finance Committee is adjourning one more time.
Well, just one more thing. Rose's birthday.